So what do narcissists do when they get older? Do you have an aging parent? Do you have a narcissist in your life? Are you wondering why they are like a little bit more crazy, a little bit more paranoid, a little bit more angry, mean and abusive as they get older? Let's think about that. Do they pull the victim card out more, trying to get attention? Remember, narcissists are in it for the attention and the adoration. And as they get older, well, maybe they lost their looks. Then nobody's going to tell them how cute they are anymore. So they might turn to different things. They also might look for different types of supply. If they go into a nursing home, they might be looking for people who can do things for them, of course. But they might be looking for people to just fill that need for attention. So today we're going to talk with psychologist Stephanie Kreisberg. She is an expert on narcissism, and we're going to talk about what do narcissists look like when they get older, and how can you, as a child of a narcissist or someone working with a narcissist, help yourself to understand it, make decisions about your parent, and really free yourself from the guilt of those decisions. It's not easy if you've got an aging parent to make a decision to walk away, for example. So today we're going to talk with Stephanie. So let's welcome Stephanie. This is Tracy Malone from NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. If you're looking for more answers, please visit my website. You can get resources, find support groups in your area, and learn about the red flags of a narcissist, and even have me come and do some coaching with you. So visit my website, and let's get started. Welcome, Stephanie. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me, Tracy. I'm really excited to be here.
Can you tell my audience a little bit about yourself, just so we've got the skinny on who you are?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So my name is Stephanie Kreisberg. I'm a clinical psychologist in Concord, Massachusetts. That's a little outside of Boston. And I've been practicing psychology for about 25 years now. And I work with kids, teens, and adults, but one of my real areas of expertise and a really rewarding part of my practice is working in particular with daughters of narcissistic mothers, although I work with other people whose lives have been touched with people who have narcissism. And I try to help people understand what narcissism is, because it's something that people really don't know what it is. And then more importantly, how to cope with it in their lives, how to cope with it, move forward, so it isn't really having such a huge impact on them. Yeah.
Thank you. That's really important, because today what we're talking about is aging narcissists. And there's quite a different way, as we've talked in our calls before today. There's many ways that aging narcissists can come into our life. So as you said, you work with adult children of a narcissist, and we'll talk about that. But there's also the factor that a narcissist gets old because they've made so many enemies and burned bridges with their family. Often they end up in a nursing home and sometimes die alone. And so I think it's important to understand that, because I've gotten calls from people whose parents are in a nursing home. Their mother is being abused by someone in the nursing home, and the nursing home doesn't really know how to, they're not diagnosing, of course. They're trying to figure it out. So we'll put a little tiny touch of that in, just some of the information that I've gathered on that. But I think we'll start off today by asking you, what are the common behaviors of a narcissist? And maybe you can say these are general and this might be changing when they become older. However you want to share that. And let's just start the conversation with the behaviors of a narcissist, what they can expect.
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, I want to say that, you know, we tend to look at it, there's sort of two overall categories of narcissism, but that underneath the core of who the person is inside, it's very similar, okay? Mm-hmm. So we tend to think of there being an overt, grandiose narcissist, mm-hmm. and then what we call a covert or vulnerable narcissist, okay? So, and it's also important to point out that narcissism exists on a spectrum, okay? So someone could have just a few traits of narcissism or be really extreme in terms of a personality disorder. And also within one person, it can vary from time to time. So because it's really influenced by what's going on in the person's life, it can fluctuate. And that's one of the reasons it can be so confusing for people, because it's not consistent. Mm-hmm. So that's part of why people who have a narcissist in their life can feel kind of crazy, because it can vary so much. Okay, so the overt grandiose narcissist, that's sort of the more stereotypical narcissist, the person with a very big personality, who requires a lot of attention, who comes into the room and is sort of loud and boisterous and needs everyone to pay attention to them. This is the kind of person who's very entitled, might be very successful, might be very successful in business or politics or whatever it is that they do, very demanding of people. But like the other type of narcissist really has very little empathy for other people's needs, very critical, and talking about themselves all the time. The kind of person who just takes up all the air in the room. Okay.
And they can then also be very charming.
Yes, and very charming as well.
Can be like, I mean, everybody wants to be their friend because
right.
they're connected and they've got clout, if you would, because they command that room. So
that's right. And that's so one of the hallmarks, and this is what can be so difficult for their adult child, is they are very different in the outside world than they are behind closed doors with their family. So the outside world might see that charming person who can work the room, and that's what gets them to be so successful. But behind closed doors, they might be very critical, volatile, very quick to anger, and that's not necessarily what the outside world sees. Although sometimes they might, their coworkers, with their underlings, they might certainly see that side. Mm-hmm. So, but there's also that really charming side also.
I think that's what confuses people.
Yes.
They also hold on to the charm and mm-hmm. believe that person can come back.
Yes.
And they hold on to it and they excuse the bad behaviors mm-hmm. because of the good. And they're going, oh no, they're really, really sweet, you know?
But that's right.
Sometimes,
right. And if a person has only seen the charming side, it can be very hard to believe that there is another side, because it's so powerful. Yes. They tend to be very entitled and to think that they deserve and really truly believe that they're more special than other people and that they deserve special privileges. So they might really, depending on where they are in the spectrum, they might not really be rule followers. They feel like, they can just kind of break rules or bend the rules because they're entitled to special privileges in the world.
Rules don't apply to them.
Rules don't apply to them. So this might be the person who, might just park in the handicap parking spot, to the person who might, embezzle from their, company because they just kind of feel like, well, I'm entitled to this. It could be a very relatively small violation of other people's rights to quite a large one. So it really depends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing that you're going to see is that their emotions are very volatile. People who have narcissism, and this is again the underlying trait, they have really difficulty. They're out of touch with their own emotions. So their emotions tend to go kind of up and down with a roller coaster. So they really need outside attention and outside admiration in order to feel good. So when they're not getting that, that's when they can be very explosive.
Right. And as they get older, I think that they sort of amplify the anger and things like that. They're quicker to go. Like the fuse gets shorter. Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but the experiences that I've had and talked to people is that as they get older, these can amplify, or they can get dementia and forget that they have to be mean.
Right. Well, that certainly can happen with dementia, but what can also happen as people age is that the things that did kind of bulk them up and the resources that they had that kind of stroke their ego, they no longer had. So maybe they're not the boss anymore. They're retired. They're not in charge of the company, or they're not doing whatever they did that made them, that every day kind of stroke their ego. And so they feel very diminished. But, and this is another, again, the underlying core trait of narcissism is a lack of self-awareness. So they're not aware that this is happening. They can't step back and say, it's really hard for me, you know, not to be the boss anymore. That meant so much to me. Like other people, like you or I could, right? And kind of deal with that feeling. Instead, they're going to just lash out at somebody. So that's more, that's kind of talking about some of the overall traits and describing the overt grandiose narcissist. And I think we can all easily think of somebody like that, or I tend to think of, you know, the Real Housewives on, you know, of various cities on TV, kind of, you know, exemplifying.
Exactly. And that. I think that's the stereotype that people associate. And in many ways, to the people that are uneducated about this, who haven't had to deal with it, that's why they don't study it, right? In many ways, that persona that they're thinking of, it doesn't seem very harmless just because they're, you know, grandiose or they're, you know, people don't see the harm in it. And that's the danger.
Yes.
You know, is that there's a lot more to it than they like to look in the mirror, as my therapist told me when I learned about it. I was like, that's not all of it.
Right. It's not just like huffing and puffing.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Deeper things. And so this is really helpful.
Right. It's much deeper in terms of their own internal life and much deeper in terms of how they treat other people.
Yeah. The harm that they do.
Right. And the harm that they do. That's right.
And we all have narcissistic traits. So, and they're healthy. I mean, it's healthy to feel good about yourself. That's self-love, right? And I see people say all the time, well, you know, I do like myself. Does that mean I'm a narcissist? And that's not it.
Right. We all need to feel good about ourselves. That's called healthy self-esteem. We all should feel pride in our accomplishments. You know, if we don't have that, you know, the ability to work hard, accomplish something, and feel good about that, we're in trouble, right? We call that, you know, agency in psychology. The problem with narcissists is you might think of it, it's like a bottomless pit that can never be filled. And they always need it to be filled. And if they want you to fill it at any particular moment and you don't fill it with, let's say, a compliment or attention, then watch out. You're going to be in trouble. You know, you're going to be attacked or get their rage or even a withdrawal of attention. That's another way.
Yeah, big one. Passive aggression. Treatment is never fun.
And that's the difference between, you know, somebody else who, you know, of course, maybe I'll get a new hairstyle and come to work and think, oh, I hope somebody notices it. That would feel good. But if somebody doesn't notice my new hairstyle, I'm not going to throw a fit in the middle of my office. Right.
But your hair does look good.
Oh, well, thank you. So that's the difference. Okay. So now we're talking about the if we talk about the covert or fragile narcissist, this is someone, and I also want you to know, people can go back and forth. People have, it's not either or, okay? People can have characteristics of both of these subtypes, okay? They go back and forth, although some might be more one than the other. So this is a person, the covert, fragile, or vulnerable narcissist, they're sometimes called, is someone who might be, you know, more quiet, not the person who comes in and takes over all the attention in the room. And yet inside they're just as empty, just as needy, and winds up demanding just as much attention from other people, but in a different way. So this might be someone who maybe gets sick a lot and then demands, let's say for an older person, gets sick a lot and then demands that you be at her beck and call 24/7. This could be particularly troublesome, you know, with an aging parent, and is not able to empathize that you still have your own life and perhaps a family to take care of, a job, and that you cannot be at her beck and call, or will become very critical and rageful if let's say a nursing home aide or nurse cannot, you know, hop every time she presses her call button, and not understand that there are other people there as well.
Well, as you were saying that, I had flashbacks. My mother's gone about 3 years now, and towards the end, I was getting calls from the assisted living that she was living in, and she was calling the front desk, which was outside her door, 70 times a day.
Wow.
Times are like, okay, your mother's having a really bad day. It hit 70 today, you know? And it was like no consideration that, you know, mom, they've got a routine. They've got to dress everybody, feed everybody, change everybody. And she was just like, but I'm important. You know, that was that exact same kind of need for attention. And, you know, for her, she had 70 operations. And it was always an attention grabbing. Well, take care of me. I need someone to take care of me. Look, I'm so fragile. They become the victim, right?
Yeah. And, you know, they at a nursing, they might well have a need. They might really need to say, you know, have an itch and want some cream, but no sense that I can wait, I can manage my needs, I can manage my emotions, because they really have no capacity to sort of self-soothe, to manage their own emotions. They tend to be very impulsive. And that's kind of part of that makeup, and no real ability to what we call in psychology, kind of emotional regulation. So, and then when they're older, that tends to diminish even more. So
what other covert tips do you have, or some kind of behaviors?
Okay, so just some other behaviors that you might see, you know, very subtly critical, resentful, you know, more of the passive aggressive, comments, you know, demanding a lot of time and attention from people, is what you might see with the more fragile person. You know, even, you know, from their children when they're growing up, you know, a real role reversal, you know, what we call just, you know, making their children into the parentified child, expecting their children or teenagers, you know, to really take care of them in ways that aren't appropriate. You know, maybe the parent, you know, telling their child or their teenager, you know, information about themselves that's not appropriate to be heard. So not really understanding where the boundaries are between an adult and a child or a teenager, because inside, and this is important to understand for both types of narcissists, and I always explain this to people right off the bat, is that inside with a narcissist, you're dealing with someone who's truly never grown up. You're not dealing with a mature person. I mean, we all, you know, mature as inside, just like we learn to walk and talk, we mature emotionally. Mm-hmm. And they never really do. So inside, you're really dealing with a young child. Mm-hmm. I usually say maybe a preteen at best. Okay. But they look like an adult on the outside.
Right. I was reading a book this weekend, and they said somewhere between like the age of 8 and 10, mm-hmm. on where their wound was or where whatever happened to them that sort of went to the dark side was, because it can be as young as 6, according to what I read. Do you mm-hmm. have any information on like that age range, or is it just sort of under a teenager level of emotional?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, it could be like, I usually say around preteen behavior, preteen and down. So 10, 11, you know, something like that. And of course, sometimes they really act like preschoolers, you know, when they go into full-fledged, you know, tantrum mode, and they really can't think. And I find that very helpful for people to understand that. And I've had people tell me, get this expression on their face, like, I always felt like I was being raised by a child, or I was dealing with a child. And it can be such a sense of relief to realize that, because that's what it always, in fact, felt like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's helpful. So when we have an adult child, we're going to start by talking about that before we talk a little bit more about the nursing homes. But when we have an adult child of a narcissistic parent, which is, I think, where people might be coming to this video, parents are aging. And for me, I'll just throw this in there to start the conversation. But when my mom was in that nursing home dying, burned her bridges. Neither one of my sisters wanted to talk or take care of her. Mm-hmm. And so I had to step up. And there was this sort of dichotomy of, wait a second, I wasn't like the favorite child. Mm-hmm. Here I am forced to, or by choice, I guess. I'm not going to say she forced me, but you know, she was alone. I took her in and took care of her. And I think a lot of adult children deal with that same sort of thing. Like they were pushed away their whole life, and now it's their turn, and they've got to sort of give back to mom. Mm-hmm. So how do people deal with this? And what kind of tips can you give them to understand what's going on?
Well, I think that's a really good question, because I think many people find themselves in just that position, you know, where some of the siblings, if they're not the only sibling, then some of them are just, you know, I'm done, I'm out of here. And, you know, they may find themselves being the only one. You know, in any case, you know, I think the most important thing, if you are, you know, fortunate enough to be able to share the burden, or you're doing it yourself, is to be able to really tune in to your own needs and to set boundaries and limits, you know, because I just always think back to that old, you know, saw of, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself first. You have to be, you know, you have to be able to survive first and take care of yourself. And the demands can be, you know, relentless, even if the parent isn't narcissistic, but especially so. So, you know, here are some specific ideas. So if you find that your parent, you know, is just demanding more and more than you can give, and especially if they're narcissistic, could be cruel, could be critical, could be belittling, could be mean-spirited, and is going to, one thing these parents are really good at is pressing buttons, right? Pressing your internal buttons. So all kinds of old feelings are going to get stirred up, or maybe they're not that old. I mean, they could be still very fresh buttons, right? I'm no good. I'm not good enough. I'm a bad, you know, son. I'm a bad daughter. I have to do these things. Is to really be aware of, you know, what you can handle, what you can't handle, to really be able to talk to yourself about that's okay, mm-hmm. and to know that you don't have to do it all yourself. That there are other resources out there, and to have a way of presenting this to your parent, if you're, for instance, going to make some changes mm-hmm. in a way that's really, you know, firm but clear. Mm-hmm. So let's say, I'll give you an example, okay? And I always believe in like practicing it first. So let's say every week you've been doing your parents' grocery shopping and then taking them to the senior center twice a week. Let's say if they're still living like in an apartment or in a, you know, independently. And you realize I can't handle that. It's just too much for me. And you decide to hire someone, which is a very good idea to help with that. And you know your parent, your father is going to go bananas. You can say to them, you know, Dad, I like spending time with you. It's important to me. And is a great word, Tracy, okay, versus but, because it doesn't stir up as many emotions. And I find that I need more time, you know, to take care of my family and work. So I've hired somebody who will do your grocery shopping and do one trip a week to the senior center. But we're still going to have a nice afternoon together on Fridays when we go to the senior center. Period, end of story. No explaining. If they want to get you caught up in a tug of war, you know, but, just kind of firmly reinforce mm-hmm. what you want to say. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yes.
And I love the end trick.
Yes.
We're so used to going, but.
And really makes a big difference in your ear.
Oh, yeah.
I love yeah. that. And I'm also a big believer when these things start to go on is to take breaks. If you're finding, which is also good for staff on a nursing home, if it's starting to get heated up, say, I'll be right back. And leave for a moment, call a friend, walk around the block, listen to a funny video, calm down your nervous system. Because like I said, they are so good at pressing our buttons and revving up our fight or flight response or revving up our nervous system, and then come back in when you're settled down.
That makes yeah. sense. Yeah. yeah. I know that there's a lot of stress and anxiety and even guilt in mm-hmm. walking away. So
yeah.
giving someone else that's going to food shop for them or, you know, whatever it is, there's guilt, like, oh, I should be taking care of them. But then you've got the push me, pull you, mm-hmm. how mean they are when you're there and mm-hmm. telling you you're stupid and you bought the wrong cookies. And, you know, so how do people deal with that kind of guilt and, you know, just the stress and the anxiety of being put in that role when they were always sort of, I don't want to say the scapegoat, but, you know, they weren't the golden child necessarily.
Yeah.
They've got that guilt of, ooh.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really hard. I think it takes a lot of practice, a lot of talking to yourself, and trying to remember the difference, the way that I see it, between guilt and shame. You know, so guilt is, I did something wrong. I did something that goes against my moral compass. Okay. Whereas shame is a sense of that I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'm flawed in some way, I'm a bad person. And really, I think that's what these parents tend to stir up, the feeling of you're bad, you're no good, you're a bad daughter, you're a bad son. And if you can kind of differentiate, how am I really feeling here? Am I feeling like I'm a bad person? Do I really feel it so bad to let someone else grocery shop once a week? Is that so bad? Mm-hmm. And try to differentiate that yeah. for yourself and stay really mindful of your feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, talk to yourself a lot about that. You know, it's not a one and done deal. It takes a lot of practice over and over. Again, I tell people that you have to be able to really talk to yourself in a very wise, reassuring way over and over again. And be very kind.
Right.
To yourself.
That makes sense. I know sometimes, you know, that the decision has to be made to walk away. You know, we mm-hmm. call contact. Tell me how people can struggle and deal with that, because that is, it's like you're killing them. To me, it's like you're killing them before they're dead, and you've got that guilt and that, you know, you've got the guilt of that, but you've also got the grief of, you're grieving them. They're not there. You've kicked them out of your life. Mm-hmm. I'm an adult child of an adult parent, deal with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is a very hard decision, but for some people that is the right decision to make. You know, it's very personal. It's the only decision to make. If you find that being with if your parent is, you know, verbally abusive to you, in a situation where they're, you know, physically abusive, could be physically abusive to you, then, you know, you might find that you really have no choice. And then you have to go through, you know, you have to go through a mourning process of letting go of that parent, of who you wish they were and longed for, and who they couldn't be, and grieving the relationship, you know, that you couldn't have with them, you know, that you did. Deserve.
I think a lot of the guilt comes from not really being able to process anymore. If you walk away, there's no hope for her or him to be that parent that you dreamed they'd be.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that it's letting go of that hope in addition to the parent. But now you're letting go of the hope that, wait, we could work this out. They could end up being, you know, back where I believe they should be. That makes sense?
Yes, and absolutely. And that's where I think it can be helpful to try and really understand what narcissism is, that it is not something that changes very easily. I mean, some people, if they choose to go into a long course of therapy with someone who really understands it and they are highly, highly motivated to change, may be able to make some progress. Those are really the exceptions to the rule.
That's true.
And I think the other thing, you know, that you're bringing up about all this, or making me think of, is that makes it very hard for people in this position, is that this is really socially not approved of, right?
Right.
So for instance, thank goodness, maybe we're starting to understand, or maybe paying a little bit more attention to domestic violence. So if someone were to say, I'm leaving an abusive spouse, that would be something that would be supported. But I have known people who tell people, well, my elderly parent is abusive and I'm not cutting them off, and have gotten terrible feedback from people. You know, that's been so hurtful, because people don't understand that. No. You know, how could you not be in contact with your parent? You know, what kind of person are you? And whereas really it's an abusive relationship in many ways, it's an abusive relationship. You have to save yourself.
A survival. I mean, sometimes they are so toxic, and they might have even gotten worse as they age, that, you know, the adult child just, they can't deal with it. It
becomes
where they are losing touch with their own reality and their own family, because they're taking this abuse and continuing to take it. So it's a very brave thing to do. It's a choice. Mm-hmm. It is a brave thing, because now this is self-love in the highest form, to walk away despite the social norm and that, and despite, you know, your feelings of guilt, you're taking care of you for, you know, the first time probably in a long time. So I think it is a hard decision, but it is a self-love decision when you've got to do this.
Right. And I just want to say that for any victims of domestic violence who might be listening to this, you know, I'm not comparing this to being beaten by a spouse, or, I mean, I understand that there are differences. I'm just saying it's very difficult for people to do this knowing that they are, it's going to be very difficult to find someone, you know, unless you're involved in, say, a support, you know, community like yours. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so valuable who are going to understand.
Right. Yeah. To me, that's like the key is mm-hmm. when you have people that understand it, you feel less alone. And mm-hmm. All of the support groups that are around the country either specialize in adult children of, or they've got a mixture between relationships and parent or siblings, that sort of mm-hmm. thing. So you're going to get and feel so much more welcomed if you get into some kind of support group, for sure. Mm-hmm. So now I want to talk real quick about when they get old and they go mm-hmm. into a nursing home. Mm-hmm. I think in many ways, their entitlement, as we kind of talked about a little bit before, my mother calling 70 times, it's my turn, mm-hmm. can you help me, right? But they can also monopolize the staff mm-hmm. and they can abuse other people in the nursing home. Mm-hmm. I just talked to a friend that's a massage therapist, and she said she was massaging someone in a nursing home and she had to report them as being physically abused. And so there is a possibility, especially when, you know, let's say you're the patient next door to the narcissist, they can target you because maybe you're bed bound or they can sit there and harass you. I think a lot of the rules that come into play in a normal narcissistic relationship is if the person is, say, a good supply, if you would. Mm-hmm. Eating their ego, if they're being nice to them, if they've got something that the narcissist wants, then they are in good graces. Mm-hmm. Dare you try to set a boundary? Dare you say, I don't want you coming in my room? Mm-hmm. I'm public enemy number one. And mm-hmm. for me, my mom was paying $18,000 a month at a nursing home. You know, when someone's paying that kind of good money, you don't mm-hmm. want the person next door being able to abuse you in any verbal right. way or anything else. Mm-hmm. How do you see that staff at a nursing home? How can we guide them? How would they, obviously we've taught them how to identify the signs and things like mm-hmm. that. But when they're in this situation where there is someone there, what can you help the parents and tell, you know, oh, my mother's being abused by a guy next door. What do we have for them?
Well, that's a really good question. Or it might be that their parent is the one, you know, that's being difficult as well. Well, for the staff, one thing I would always say, and this is just how we think as psychologists, is that you always want to ask about, was this person, you know, always like this? Did they behave like this? Or was this their, what we call premorbid functioning, or is this new? Has this intensified? That's an important question. You know, does this reflect like changes? How much so since they're aging? So you can just get a better sense. But what I would really, advise for staff is, okay, and when I think what you might see for what staff is that they might be unwilling to admit. I'm just wanted to talk a little bit about what they might see. Yeah. Is that so? Because it's so difficult for them to acknowledge that they might not be superior or special in some way, that they might not be unwilling, like, to admit that they need, you know, help, they need a cane, or, you know, they need whatever supports that they might need. Now, this is not necessarily unusual among people in a nursing home, but it's a matter of degree. Right. So it's kind of like I was describing before with the adult child. I think you have to be firm and clear in setting limits, okay? Because this is a person who's always gonna argue with you and who has no awareness of how they impact other people, okay? They never have, they never will. So you have to be, you know, firmly and clearly set limits, undefensively, and you know, probably go, you know, over it and over it and over it. And, you know, and because, you know, if it's someone who has dementia or, you know, there might be some physical things that you might need to do about it. But I think you just have to be very clear with this person. You cannot expect them to intuit anything because they're just not going to do that. So that's one of the first things I would say, because they're just not going to have that. Again, it's got to do with the demandingness, how they treat other people. They might also, what you might also see is people who might only be willing to associate with certain people. That person isn't good enough for me. I'm not going to sit next to her at dinner, or I'm not going to go to that activity, you know, only want to, as they have always thought themselves to be, because they're special, are only going to associate with certain people. Right. So they might isolate themselves, or in that case, be not very nice to people. They still, you know, some people call them the queen of the nursing home. That's how they're identified in one particular book about aging difficult people. And so again, you know, you can make choices, you know, working with them, you're going to kind of let, maybe they'll just be more isolated, not get involved, or you might have to just set really firm limits about what is and what is not acceptable behavior.
Absolutely.
But I think it can be helpful for the staff to understand what is happening to not take it personally, because they also may be very critical of staff and lash out at staff, just like I remember one woman telling me that they hired an aide, an outside aide, just to come in and give her parent some extra help. And the parent was being quite unkind to the aide, even though she seemed to like having her. And the woman said to me, wow, it's like she's another daughter. So that the person really understand not to take it personally.
Right.
It's not a reflection of her or the staff. It's how this person operates in the world.
Right, right. And you're just the target of the day. And again, that's, if you simplify it down, instead of taking it personally, that this is just their behaviors. We have to do A, B, and C to keep them calm and quiet, so they're not getting into that hyper anger and you know, sort of an elevated state of yelling at staff or, you know, other people in the home.
Yeah, and another tool can be, and it works sometimes for a narcissist in a nursing home, is to find something to make them feel special. So perhaps if they had a skill outside, perhaps they were, you know, a very intellectual person, they could run a book, you know, run a book group. Or if they were an excellent, you know, they were very well traveled, they could, you know, show some of their, you know, pictures. So give them a role so that they can feel, get that, some of that back.
Yeah. The accolades and sort of, you know, on stage, or, you know, you're talking in front of a group, teaching them how to knit or something, then you're more.
Yes.
It raises your status, if you would.
Right. And of course, that all depends on their level of functioning. You know, maybe they're just not capable of doing that. But if they are, then that can be a good way to channel some of that narcissistic energy.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Wow. That was great. I love that one. Yeah. Do you have any other advice for the people in a nursing home, or?
Well, let's see. I think that, you know, it's just to remember about setting limits, to not get caught up in, you know, in kind of arguing with them, not take it personally. It can also be helpful just to, because they're so sensitive to criticism and they are feeling so sort of vulnerable, just to let them know, you know, a little sweet talk can go a long way sometimes with a narcissist you know, complimenting them can go a long way, noticing them. Or if you have to sort of set a limit, oh, you know, this isn't meant to criticize you, a little sweet talking, a little complimenting, and also, you know, can help.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for all of this amazing information. Do I remember that you said there was a really good book that you were going to recommend?
Yes, it is. It is called Coping with Your Difficult Older Parent. Let me make sure I'm giving you, yes, Coping with Your Difficult Older Parent, A Guide for Stressed Out Children. Okay. And the authors are Grace Lebo and Barbara Kane. Grace Lebo, L-E-E-O-W, and Barbara Kane, K-A-N-E. And it's just,
we will
just put a link. An excellent resource.
We will put a link in, because I know that all of the people who are visiting this particular video are wondering and looking for more answers. And while we've talked for less than an hour, a lot of people have put a lot of information into the books that can help guide them and really get, oh, that's what that means. Oh, that's a good tool. So I encourage everybody to go out and get the book, because
absolutely,
it is going to help you if this is what you're dealing with. Don't do it alone. Just get the information. And if you need to get some help or therapy, reach out to someone that really has a good understanding of this so that you are not alone. So
absolutely. Get help.
Yeah. Get help, because it'll ground you and get you through it. And that's the goal here, is to not try to take it all on, because this is a big thing. When they get older, they can get more paranoid. They can get more angry. They can become meaner. So it's going to confuse you. So if you can get some help, draw on that and keep yourself sane, you know, take some good grounding walks and deep breathing and whatever you've got to do to get through it. But your parents are here for just a short time at this point. If they're older, just have to make the best of whatever level you're going to be engaged with. If you're going to walk away, if you're going to put them in a home, if you're going to, you know, bring in care, there's so many factors. So I think reading this book is going to guide them to a lot more answers. So thank you so much for interviewing with me today. And we'll put your contact information down below if anybody wants to reach out to you. And really, I am so grateful.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for the work that you do.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to go read a blog that Stephanie wrote for us, we have one on our blog. So we'll put the link to that as well, because she's a pretty smart lady. So
okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Tracy. Bye.